and it's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Blah, 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 blah,
good
blah, blah, blah.
Morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives. It's Wednesday, and you know what? I'm going to make it the best Wednesday of the week. You hear me, Riley? Today is it.
The best Wednesday of the week.
Oh, man.
How many other Wednesdays of the week are there?
You're quick, Riley. You're right on top of it in the morning. That's exactly it. See that? See the gap between you saying that and realizing? And there was only one Wednesday. That's Wednesday.
Oh,
that's what happened.
Okay.
Is that you wake up, you're like, what? How come there's more days? Oh, no.
Yeah.
Did you feel that, Caleb? Do you feel that on Wednesday?
Every day, actually.
Come on. Come on. I wake up
Wednesday.
Oh, my God. It's unbelievable. Like, it was one of those, I don't know why I talk about, what I go through in the morning, but I imagine that some people identify with what I go through in the morning. Like, you just wake up on this day. This one was just bad. It was like, oh, man. Wow. We're going to do this some more. There's more week to be had. And then, like, I start thinking about the weekend, and the weekend, I'm excited about the weekend, but then sometimes you can start to dread the weekend. I don't know, man.
You're dreading the weekend?
No, I got a little work to do.
But you're dreading living like a normal human being for 48 hours?
It's like a trick, though, Riley.
I know
it's
it
a
is.
Trick. It's like, hey, look, I'm normal. And then your body's like, no, we're on the other thing. Mm. The other schedule is where we're at. And you know what I did? I was interviewed by Bust Magazine yesterday.
Bust?
Yes, this is the they call themselves basically, I guess, the third wave feminist. This is the sort of hipster feminist magazine.
Oh, okay.
Janine Garofalo has been on the cover. Amy Sedaris is on the cover this month. They're doing a profile of some men they happen to think are okay by them. And I met the woman at a place called Kate's down in the village, a vegetarian joint. And I had something that I never thought I would have. And you guys are going to laugh at me, man.
What?
How come it's always about food with me? You're gonna laugh at me. I had tofu chicken wings. Hot wings, like barbecue wings, buffalo tofu chicken wings.
What does that even mean?
I know. That's what I thought.
I don't know.
I know. What does it mean?
Was there a bone?
No, I'm a little embarrassed. But you know,
did you dip it in the?
Yeah. You can dip it in the food. No, look. Oh. Yeah, let me tell you what it is. All right, it's the illusion of a buffalo wing, because they take pieces of tofu and they cut them the shape of a buffalo wing with no bone in it, and they fry them and they buffalize them as my
buffalize them.
Well, that's actually not my word. This woman Colleen who wrote the piece on me, she said they're buffalized. So I thought that was kind of a good way to describe it. And they looked okay, and they tasted like the stuff. I'm just trying to live my life, Kayla. I don't need the judgment. I'm trying to live my life. I'm not one to don't enjoy the holographic food, the illusion foods, the healthy sort of, like, it's bacon, but it's not. I don't really go for that, you know. But I went, stop saying, you know. But I did it, and it was okay. I decided to share that with you. All right, that's all. I had buffalo tofu chicken wings.
Mm-hmm. Well, did you enjoy them?
You know, it was all right. You know, I mean, I liked it. I would have rather had, I think.
Would you rather have Aiello's? Did they make you forget all about Aiello's?
No, they don't make you forget. They make you, like, I'd rather just have the tofu. Like, I don't need the illusion of food, because it makes me go, oh, you know, these are just like the ones that are really good. These are just like the real buffalo wings that taste good. Oh, my God. There's some exciting news today, Riley. I think that, you know, today got me a little worked up. You know, Social Security's starting to fall apart for the president. He can't pitch that anymore. I like that. The Ethics Committee, they have passed a ruling that will allow them to actually do their job. Yes.
Yeah.
We've got Democrats are setting an agenda against the Republicans, but it is a real agenda. And in terms of how the Senate works, if they're not going to if they're going to threaten the nuclear option, the Democrats have found a way to actually set a Senate agenda with things that matter to real people. That's very exciting. Melvin Van Peebles, who is a character and an artist and a very funny cat, is going to be in here later in the show.
Absolutely.
It's going to be a big show.
Yeah.
I'm excited about it. You know, we've got stories that range from, let me put this out to people so they know. MoveOn.org's nationwide rallies against the right-wing's anti-American drive to end the filibuster are today. The rallies will take place across the country. You can go to the links page on morningsedition.com to find the rally nearest you. I believe they're 5:30 time. This is important stuff. Because even the the Republicans are starting to change their language. Even the Republicans are starting to take the word faith out of their pitch in terms of how they're framing their attack on the judiciary, which is good news, because that means that the fanatical Christians, the Christo-fascist zombie brigades, are starting to make the Republicans look bad, which is good news for us. So they're starting to instead use the word, you know, the war on faith by the judiciary, and just and the filibuster. Also, they're talking about it in terms of it's really the filibuster. They're talking about it as a constitutional issue, not a filibuster against faith or what have you.
Well, because they know that they've gone too far.
Good.
Now the question is, what will the religious right do to respond to this distancing? They're not going to let this happen without some kind of response that's going to be aimed at the very people that are. And by the way, they're going after, I expect to see some of these religious right people going after some of the wavering Republicans on Social Security. I mean, right now, these shock troops that the religious right have organized are all-purpose shock troops. They'll use them for anything. They'll use them from Terry Schiavo to Social Security to the Ethics Committee. It's all part. Now, mind you, you know, there are some inherent contradictions in all these different things in terms of morality, in terms of ethics, in terms of legality, in some of the stuff about delay is to be believed. But that's not going to stop these religious armies from fighting us.
So you think they are going to publicly take on Republicans? I mean, do you
if
think,
they have to, yeah.
Because I don't think we've really seen that really happen. You know,
well,
it's sort of
we
been
haven't
suggested.
Seen it. It's been suggested, but see, usually there are political arms. The Club for Growth are the people that are supposed to be keeping the moderate Republicans in line. These are the folks that threaten to run more conservative candidates against moderate Republicans, guys like Chris Shays and some of these other people, Olympia Snow. Those are the Club for Growth is a conservative organization that has essentially the Bush agenda as its agenda. And that's where you're seeing, usually, traditionally, that's where you're seeing people, trying to keep these Republicans on the reservation. Now they're going to use their, and Mark, the amazing thing is that they've convinced a lot of these people that they actually represent the sentiments of most Americans.
Well, that's the big lie. And the interesting thing that's going on in the Senate with this secret rule number 14 that allows the Democrats to determine the agenda, even though they're not the majority party, is that you'll see that the Democratic values are really the values that serve real people, and that the Christian right is really bluffing in terms of how many people they really have on board. And I think that the more dirty these Republicans look and the more they push people in a direction that they don't want to go in, people will start to wake up and start to realize that their interests aren't being served. It's a very exciting political time and a very exciting political week this week in terms of some of the stuff that's going on. And as you know, I'm new to this excitement. So when something happens like this, where the Democrats all of a sudden, it was like magic. You know, you're reading the papers yesterday, and this rule number 14, this secret senatorial trick that they're going to do. It's not even a trick.
It's not a trick. What it is doing away with a tenet of the Senate. That is deference.
Yeah.
Allowing the majority party in the body to determine the agenda. The Democrats don't have to do that. The reason why it hasn't been done up until now, quite frankly, is because senators have been more interested in scratching each other's backs, and they are very nervous about what will happen if their party is no longer in power. And for example, if the Republicans become the minority party, and the precedent that's set by doing this is then used by the Republicans to do the same thing.
Well, it's what it is. It's raw politics. It's real politics. It's what's going. It's how the government's supposed to work on a political level. Is that you're going to do that? You're going to threaten to get rid of the filibuster? Well, guess what? Ta-da!
Hardball.
There's our agenda. And playing that against your ridiculous, corrupt little bastards in the Congress and all this BS you're doing with the religious right. Look. We have things that are important to real people. How are you going to stop us from filibustering, big boy? You know what I mean? It's like unbelievable. It was exciting. It was like watching sports, and I'm glad I had the feeling.
Well, you know what? It is turning Bill Frist's argument against itself. Bill Frist has been telling people, well, there need to be votes up and down on these judges. Well, the Democrats are saying, you know what? There need to be up and down votes. The Republicans are going to have to take a position on, increasing benefits for veterans. All of these different things.
We're going to go over the list in a little while. We're going to go piece by piece and just show what the Democrats are doing. It's unbelievable to me that the way these Republicans are frantically trying to reframe their position on almost everything and then present it as if, like, well, this was always what we were doing. Yeah, no, that, I don't know what you're talking about. You must be hallucinating. I did not just, I wasn't on a video at a conference full of religious fanatics who want to kill judges. What are you, crazy? But that was like 3 days ago. Doesn't everything get erased? I thought everything is just erased after you do it. It's 16 past the hour. Good morning. It's Wednesday, Air America Radio.
Hi, this is Congressman Gerald Nadler from New York's 8th District, and you're listening to Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Morning Sedition, Air America Radio.
That's cabinet refacing from Sears Home Services, 1-800-828-1200. That's 1-800-828-1200.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. I, Mark Maron, will be in Cincinnati, Ohio at Go Bananas on May 6th and 7th. That's the weekend after this. So if you're listening to 1530 WCKY, the Revolution of Talk Radio, come on down and check it out. You can go to morningsedition.com for ticket info. Now moving onward and inward to Social Security, Mark Riley, which seems to be falling apart for our president, who insists on privatizing, but it seems like a lot of people, within his own ranks are starting to, you know, fall to the wayside.
Well, yeah, there are numbers of Republicans now that, and including, again, you know, some pretty conservative people. These are not radicals that are talking about this, but they are saying that the private accounts aspect of Bush's Social Security plan may not be able to stay on the table. Now, the president has maintained and reportedly told Congressman Charles Rangel of New York that he will never take the private accounts off the table. But see, Mark, again, the language framing has not stuck with the American people. They tried to change it from private accounts to personal accounts so it would sound more palatable to most. It hasn't worked.
Yeah, they tried happy money.
Yeah,
they've tried
everything, and the markets, you know, the financial markets really haven't been their friend in all of this either. You know,
listen to the condescension that President Bush spoke to Charlie Rangel, a congressman, with, and I'm quoting the president. Rangel actually was talking about the private accounts, and Bush says, "Quote, Congressman, I am the president, and private accounts are not coming off the table, even if it's the last day I spend in the presidency." Did Rangel need to be taught that lesson? What a condescending person this guy is. Excuse me, I'm the president. Yeah, no kidding. That's why I'm talking to you.
I got to be some political capital, and I intend to spend it. But see, he seems to be prepared to go down with the ship on this. He really doesn't have, he doesn't have to worry about an election. But what he does have to worry about, Mark, and it's starting to get spoken about in hushed tones inside the Beltway and in some places across this country, is that dreaded title, lame duck. That if this Social Security thing is not pushed through soon, George W. Bush's presidency is going to take a serious hit, at least as far as how people perceive it. It's going to be perceived as unable to get much done. This is the centerpiece. This is what he was banking all that political capital on. That's why he told Rangel that.
But he did some pretty bad things already. I mean, he's already taken the first, you know, step at, restricting victims' rights legislation, the bankruptcy legislation. I mean, he's done some pretty nasty stuff already. But this is the centerpiece. And if he goes down, but the thing is like, what? Hopefully it'll dirty the rest of the Republicans. But that guy, Bush, what's he got to lose? He could care less. He's just going to go back to Texas and sit down and be an ex-president.
Well, that's the fundamental tension between Bush and members of his own party in Congress. Many of them have to stand for election next year. Many of them may be facing energized Democratic opponents who may use Social Security against them. That's why you're seeing some of these people backing away and saying, maybe we need to rethink this a little bit. Maybe, there were reports earlier this week that there are people in Congress working behind the president's back to come up with something.
So you're saying that if he keeps going out there and pushing this idea, this legislation, this vaguely definable plan for people's retirement, and the people aren't latching on, that they will grow not only disapproving but contemptuous of him assuming that they're stupid, And eventually that will dirty the rest of the Republicans if they don't pull away from him.
If they don't get out from under. One of the more incredible things that we're seeing happen with this president and Social Security is that the more he tours America to talk about it and to tout this new plan, the worse the response from the American people, at least as far as polling is concerned. Bush's inner circle hasn't seen anything like this before, not at least in terms of his recent past, where he is going out on this tour, putting his personal capital on the line, and people are simply not responding well to it. They are doing polls in cities where Bush is gone, and what they find is that before he came, the numbers were at a certain level, and then after he leaves, the numbers go down. I'm talking about the numbers of people who approve of his plan.
Well, eventually, as people have always said, it's said to me in my moments of panic, is eventually most reasonable people will start to smell the stink of somebody pulling their chain. Eventually people will wake up to economic realities. Not everyone. Like a lot of people have told us that the religious right and there's a core base that will never change no matter what as long as they're, their particular form of fanatical religion is honored, but a lot of regular working people will start to say, I've had enough of this crap. These people are lying, they're disingenuous, they're bankrupting the country, they're restricting a lot of our freedoms, and it's not necessary, and I don't like them.
Well, look, I mean, you got Lindsey Graham, again, a conservative senator from South Carolina, guy who, as a congressman, led the impeachment battle against Bill Clinton. He's saying, rather than the private accounts, he'd rather see the ceiling, the current $90,000 ceiling, lifted as a way of trying to make the system solvent, if that's what needs to be done. And he's being attacked by the Club for Growth. The Club for Growth helped create Lindsey Graham, for God's sake. And now they're attacking him for saying the president's plan is probably not going to work. We need to look at something else.
It's unbelievable how they eat their own. But they don't do it, face to face. They do it through these groups you're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely.
And also, I think that they're just the utter fear to even mention the possibility of raising taxes on the extremely wealthy to maybe help this system is mind-blowing to me, that anybody who even mentions the word taxes, they're like, that's it, he's out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Feed him to one of the front organizations for the mob.
Absolutely. We're going to come back. We're going to talk more about Social Security because it leads people to take some bizarre steps. We'll tell you what they are when we come back here on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
That's ringoffireradio.com and join Pav and me on our new two-hour show right here on Air America Radio.
Four past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. Hey, if you want to protest the nuclear option in anti-American drive to end the filibuster, you can join MoveOn.org's nationwide rallies. If you want to find out where a rally is today near you, go to MorningSedition.com, and we will link you to that information. You know, I'm thinking, Riley, if you're the president and people are disagreeing with how you're pitching a particular idea, a bit of revamping, a new way to sort of pillage the elderly's money and put it in a high-risk situation. If you're out there trying to lie to the people about the benefits of such a program, and you say, well, who should I bring with me? Who should I put on the plane to help support me out there on the road that can maybe bring a little something to the table in terms of profile? Would you say maybe a movie star or even a shining example of what the president thinks it is to be a good politician? No. He brings Tom DeLay on the plane. The guy's bringing Tom DeLay on the road with him to sell Social Security. And you know what scares me is that there are Americans that will get so caught up with looking at the two together and thinking, like, look at that. That's a president who stands by an idea and also stands by his friends. And you've got to like that in a person. That's a president that will not change his mind even in the face of people not liking what he has to say and even in the face of being wrong. Even in the face of it being a bad idea, and he'll also stand by his friends no matter how corrupt and how much that friend has done to you know, just to put it to the American people to pillage their money by aligning himself with people like Enron and corrupt lobbyists and deferring money into his wife's bank account. But there are some Americans that will look at those two and go, those guys are good guys because they're loyal guys. And those Americans are stupid, and they have their priorities in the wrong place.
Well, see, what I find interesting about this, I'm going to speculate here and figure that the deal for delay to join Bush's now doomed Social Security tour, because remember, every place he goes, public opinion declines after he's there. But I think they did this at the Pope's funeral.
Yeah,
I think DeLay got on in the back of the plane with Bush during. He said, "Listen, I need help. I need something to get me out of this mess." So Bush said, "Well, look, you know, I'm going to be traveling around promoting social. Why don't you come with me?" I mean, this is just speculation on my part, but they were both over there at the same time, and I think that we were speculating about what they might have been talking about during that.
Right,
and I think this is a result of it.
I guess, but I imagine that the president needs delay on some level to, you know, to operate, to get anything he needs to get through Congress, through Congress. But the guy is such a, there's such a stink on him, Riley, and it's going to become, but, you know, more apparent, and we're going to talk about him in just a minute. I wanted to talk about this story in terms of just, you know, what people will do to get their hands on Social Security money, because this is like... It just keeps getting weirder. As you look at this story, it just keeps unfolding. This 52-year-old Wisconsin man was apparently... his mother had died of natural causes, so he says.
Yes.
And he kept her in a freezer in the basement in order to keep getting her Social Security checks, okay? But as I read the story, it's just, apparently this has been going on for 4 years. That he's been, this is real Ed Gein stuff you were talking about that yesterday, right? But he tells the police that his mother had died in August of 2000, all right? He claims he initially concealed her death because he was afraid to be blamed for killing her. And he said that, this is the line that kills me, because it just sits there in this piece, in this story. He said his mother's blood was already on the walls of their home from an attack by her cats.
Years ago.
What the hell does that even mean? And that's the end of the paragraph? It just hangs like that?
Yeah.
But a little investigation? Nothing?
No pine salt?
Oh, yeah, the blood on the wall. That was from a thing that happened with the cats.
Right. Many years ago. He must have been attacked by about 500 cats.
So the cops found this chest. Like, well, I understand that. You know, it is possible. I go to sleep with that fear every night. I got three wild cats in my house. The events that led to the discovery were a little bizarre as well. A 10-year-old boy told his father that this guy had hit him. So the father and mother went over to the guy's house, and this guy, the guy who's hiding his mother in the basement in the freezer, took a handgun out and shot the kid's father three times.
Three times, yeah.
Oh, my God.
And then had a hostage standoff. The SWAT team showed up. I mean, this was a very, very bizarre guy. He told the SWAT teams, apparently, he had more than 10 but less than 100 bombs and 16 firearms.
So it's just one of those stories where it's like, okay, he's got his mom in the freezer. That's weird. But it's just one of many of this guy's problems, apparently. I don't know what he was planning to do with the firearms or anything else, but this all started with a guy that, you know, just... couldn't let go of his mother's Social Security money.
Well, yeah, and he's going to be charged with attempted homicide, reckless endangerment, and having improvised explosives, a tune of 20 homemade bombs and 16 various types of guns, and concealing a corpse. I don't know if he'll do hard time for all this, you know.
I think, of course, you would think he would.
You might think somebody? He would. Yeah, he shot the same guy three times.
All right. Well, look, here's some good news out of Texas. Someone's going to go up against DeLay. That's a good
thing. Thank goodness.
Right? This Democratic former U.S. Representative Nick Lampson filed papers with the Federal Election Commission Tuesday. He's going to challenge House Majority Leader Tom DeLay. He's got to move to his district, but he's going to do it. And I think this guy's got some sour grapes. I think that after the redistricting of Texas, this guy was left with a... with a different
no
district.
No place to go.
Yeah.
Well, you know, this was DeLay's whole point in getting the Texas. And remember now, that at a point, they were sending state troopers into Oklahoma to try and find these recalcitrant Democrat legislators in Texas that refused to come in to make a quorum so they could pass all of this gerrymandering foolishness that DeLay had brought about. But there should be a line of Democrats in Texas, former congresspeople, former state senators, former representatives. There must be a line of people who would be prepared if they have to move to DeLay's district and run against this.
I would imagine it's about money, isn't it, Riley?
How much can you raise?
Yeah, how much can you raise, and if they want to go through that, how much of their own money they want? A lot of them feel like they can't beat the guy, but I think that, you know, who knows? I think there's a possibility that the tides can turn about how people feel about this person.
Well, I mean, he's going to be in D.C. tomorrow, as a matter of fact, for a fundraiser, it was supposed to be a trip about something different. Now it's going to be a kickoff to his campaign. I say more power to him.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know what kind. I mean, DeLay's last race, I think he won fairly easily, but not overwhelmingly. Well, if they can, you know, if Democrats can make a little bit more of a chip. And Mark, we've been talking to people from Texas who say that there are more. God, I'm not going to use the term blue red because that's so stupid. There are more progressives in Texas than most people outside of Texas give the state credit for.
And there are some people within Texas, there's been reports that, you know, some Republicans are starting to turn on DeLay because they believe that people, representatives, state representatives, that their representatives should have some, you know, some sort of ethical standard. I mean, and you cannot deny, you know, over the last month or so that what's come out to implicate, you know, DeLay in some pretty questionable behavior in terms of, you know, money and trips and who paid for the trips and why he took
the
trips.
We know he didn't pay for any of them.
That after a certain point, accusations, you know, people are going to look at him and say, it doesn't matter whether he did it or not. What matters is that I don't trust him anymore. These guys will do anything to, you know, get out of, you know, to lie to get out of accusations, and it, you know, the hell with it. This is not what I want my state representative to be.
Well, and see, people, a lot of Republicans around the Beltway know very, very well that Tom DeLay's problems backwash on all politicians. People then tend to see the Beltway as a nest of vipers, that nothing changes, whether it's Democrats or Republicans. What's the difference between Jim Wright and Tom DeLay? There is no difference between the two. To a lot of working, struggling people, these are just a bunch of folks that have managed to get themselves elected to office and have created their own elite class of folks. Remember, none of these people pay for health care.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? None of them. They don't pay a dime. They get a toothache, they get it fixed, they don't have to worry about a bill. It's not the way most Americans live their lives. And when they see this kind of excess, when they hear $500,000 to your wife and daughter, and DeLay says, well, yeah, I paid it, but that's not so bad. Everybody else does it, even if they do it to the tune of $15,000 instead of $500,000. It doesn't make any difference. And that's the arrogance that a lot of Americans have a great deal of trouble with.
I hope so. You know, I think that sometimes some Americans think that this is just the life these guys lead, and they don't care about the ethics of their state representative. They don't care, you know, whether or not they take these trips or bought and owned by corporate interests. They just care that they're Republican. And that is a person that has no real values. And they claim to have values, but they align themselves with these people that are corrupt, that screw the working people out of their living, out of their futures, out of their money, out of their ability to fight for themselves in court. They always, you know, honor the corporate interests. Yet some Republicans, even though they're working people, will just, out of their contempt for Democrats, vote for unethical people. And these are people that claim to hold the moral standard in this country. And it's a lie.
Well, yeah, it's a lie. And what more and more people are starting to realize is that there is no great economic benefit, even going to, in many cases, middle and upper middle income people out of this administration. The very people that voted for this guy, because they thought, well, gee, you know, he's the one that's going to, you know, that is in favor of people that invest their money. He's the one that promotes the ownership society. I own this. I own that. He's good for me. And now they're starting to see little by little, bit by bit, that he's not so good for them.
Culture of debt. Not ownership society. But, you know, stop saying that. There is good news on the other side of this break, that the Ethics Committee has made some changes. Some changes are being made, and there will be an investigation, perhaps. I don't know. We'll let you know when we come back. It's 45 past the hour.
Hi, this is Mike Mills from REM, and you are listening to Mark and Mark on Morning Sedition here on Air America Radio.
See if you qualify to dramatically reduce your tax debt. Call 800-661-0491 right now. That's 800-661-0491. Call right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, 49 past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
Sarah America Radio's morning sedition. Okay, there you go. That's the sound of the fax machine. From the Streisand compound, here's your liberal agenda for today. Write these down. One, use the photo of President Bush and the Saudi prince holding hands in your new flyer promoting gay marriage. Two, hey, how about this one? Tonight, stand outside your neighbor's window with a universal remote control, and every time he turns on American Idol, switch it to Tavis Smiley.
There you go.
Okay. Three, console morbidly obese people by reminding them that they're helping to promote safe sex by making sure no one wants to them. All right, here's the next one. Conserve energy by turning down the thermostat in the freezer where you store your mother's dead body so you can collect your Social Security check. Five, today's phrase just dropped into conversation. Without the filibuster to keep our extremist judges, this country would have a worse bench than the Seattle Mariners. Wake up, sheeple. They want to keep us in the minors forever. All right. Okay. That's that. There you go. How's it going, Riley? Where are we at? Okay, we're talking about the way we're talking about the ethics committee. We're going into it.
Yeah.
It seems that some changes have been made. Now, I want to talk about the political ramifications and manifestations and, you know, what does this mean? First, set up the story for me and tell me exactly what happened. The ethics committee is now going to be effective.
Okay. In January, let's go back to January. In January, Republicans on the ethics committee changed the rule that required the committee to consider a complaint against a House member if it was a 5-5 vote of the committee, because there's 5 Democrats and 5 Republicans. The way the rule had run up until January, a 5-5 vote meant that the investigation went forward. The change they tried to make was to have a 5-5 vote essentially mean whatever Tom DeLay wanted it to mean, which means it would essentially die. Remember, too, that the Ethics Committee had been changed in terms of its composition. There had been, I believe, 3 people who had been booted off, replaced by people, a couple of whom had donated money to Tom DeLay's legal defense fund.
That's an interesting thing to me. You know, but all 5 of them had some sort of link to Tom DeLay. And how is that ethical? I mean, that in and of itself should be under investigation, shouldn't it? Why don't they investigate the 5 guys that he has links to on his own ethics committee?
On his own ethics committee, whether or not those people should be sitting in judgment of alleged ethics violations by someone they gave money to. That doesn't make any sense at all. Wouldn't make sense outside the Congress. Only inside the Beltway can people get away with this kind of crap. But now, what has happened now is they want put it this way.
Yeah.
The Republicans have backed off that January rule that they went to so much trouble to try and pass. So now they are prepared to say that a 5-5 deadlock will move an investigation forward. There are still some questions about whether or not an automatic dismissal would take place after either 90 or 120 days, because that was another part of all this. So now it looks as though the Democrats on this particular issue have won. It means, A, that the Ethics Committee can now start to do its business, and, B, its first order of business will likely be the alleged transgressions of one Tom DeLay.
Who has been brought, you know, he's been reprimanded, what, 3, 4, 5?
3 different times in the past year by that same committee, which is why they changed the people on the committee.
Well, now, what I want to know is why all of a sudden the change of heart on behalf of the Republicans? Because, you know, obviously there's no reason to trust these guys, and there's some part of me that says they're one step ahead of everything all the time, and maybe they are overreaching. But why all of a sudden? Is the stink getting too bad? Is this something they had to do because they were losing traction in their message? Is it somehow rigged, Riley? And also, are Democrats now going to be investigated en masse by this committee?
Well, they probably will start to throw some Democrats into the mix. That's probably expected, and the Democrats in Congress know this already. That's probably why so many of them are rushing to make sure each and every tab, each and every bill, each and every check from signature Jack Abramoff's restaurant is lifted and paid in full by the bearer. I mean, they are now, everyone is looking to cover themselves in all this, because, and Mark, this is a fact of life in Washington, D.C. I hate to put it all inside the Beltway, but this is the only interesting thing that goes on in the city of Washington, to be quite honest with you. There's not that much else interesting that goes on. These people live, they go down on K Street. Any of you who've ever been to D.C., K Street is where all of these big lobbying firms, including Abramoff's and the rest of them, that's where they're all located. K Street might as well be changed to Lobbying Street, because that's exactly where all of these firms call home.
So you're telling me that not much goes on to help the American people
Very
in Washington,
little,
D.C.
If anything goes
this
on
is just
to
the
help
games that they play.
This is a game that they play. But see, now what they're starting, the Republicans are starting to, you know, wet their finger and stick it up in the wind on a lot of these issues, on Social Security and the rest of this stuff. And they don't want to be caught out looking as though they condone the kind of behavior that the lay is accused of. And if they think, you know, if the Republicans realize that by standing in the way of actually having an investigation go forward, they risk being seen by the American people as, you know, protecting someone whose business is more than a little shady, and that they did not want to have. These guys are up for election next year.
Oh, it's going to be, I think it's going to be a very exciting 2006 with these elections. I've been disappointed before, but it would seem to me that because of all the stuff that's coming out, that, you know, people will start to wake up a little bit. Now, Jack Abramoff is even dirtier than anyone assumed. Apparently, you know, Tom DeLay, over a two-year period, you know, talked to the guy like almost every day.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's unbelievable. I don't understand how clear does it have to be. He used his credit card to buy Tom DeLay a trip, and you're going to believe the bug-killing dwarf king of the neocon death cult's legislative pig pack, and when he says that he had no idea where that money was coming from. This guy's meticulous. This guy, you know, never leaves a stone unturned. This guy is working every angle all the time. All of a sudden, he didn't know? It's ridiculous. If the investigation, what are the chances of the investigation having any teeth and really putting this guy under?
Oh, no. This investigation is going to have to be thorough, and if it goes down a straight party line vote, it's going to have to be even deeper, because that's what happens. Once you get that 5-5 vote, now that they've rescinded this rule they imposed in January, the investigation must go forward. And maybe Jack Abramoff is going to have to explain how come his office was in constant contact with Tom DeLay over this issue of the Northern Mariana Islands, where, you know, there were these sex shops and all of the rest of this foolishness going on. And Tom DeLay and Jack Abramoff conspired together to make sure there was no House vote on a bill that would have spoken to those two issues.
Yeah. To me, it couldn't be clearer. And this guy, Jack Abramoff, is obviously, you know, had a lot of... I get so worked up, Riley, because I want some satisfaction. I want some justice. Is it possible it's going to... A lot of Democrats want DeLay to stay there for as long as possible to make everybody look dirty, but I want him to go down.
Hey, look, I'm jealous. I like freebies. You know, I mean, look, this guy apparently never met a trip he couldn't take, a meal he couldn't eat,
yeah.
Never met anything that he couldn't take advantage of. If it's not for free, it's not for Tom DeLay. When we come back... Well, we're going to talk about some strange stories this morning. We'll get to a couple when we come back. There's Future Mark, there's Democrats, there's the...
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition Program. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor. How are you, lurking conservatives out there in the ether, wondering what we're talking about, condescending, perhaps, writing emails to sedition@airamericaradio.com. Some guy sent us some mayonnaise.
What?
Yeah, I got an email. We didn't get it yet, but I'm assuming it's not going to be any good when it gets here. We had that long conversation.
Yeah, the Hellman's Best Food
conversation. The Hellman's Best Food conversation, right? So some guy sends, I got an email. I don't know if, I didn't see it. Maybe they didn't let it through, but some guy sent us some homemade mayonnaise in the mail. Could you imagine? I appreciate the gesture. But what's he thinking?
Well, maybe it's been cold in the Midwest, so maybe it kept.
I know, that's what he said. You should get it tomorrow, and if it shows up tomorrow and you get it in the fridge, it should be okay by Wednesday. But, I mean, first of all, my goodness.
It should be okay by Wednesday?
I appreciate the gesture, and I'm sure it's very interesting and exciting to have homemade mayonnaise, but we didn't get it yet, so I appreciate you sending it, but we're not going to eat it.
Probably not.
It's like 2 days. It's going to be 3 days old, three-day-old homemade mayonnaise that was sent to the mail. First of all, the idea of fresh mayonnaise being sent to you by somebody in the mail—it's already questionable.
I hope it's in a plastic container for that.
I got to be honest with you: mayonnaise in a jar that you buy at the store, questionable, as far as I'm concerned. The whole thing gives me the creeps. I don't know why it gives me the creeps. This is an interesting story that I guess George Bush was in Galveston, Texas yesterday.
Yeah.
And, well, of course he knows about Texas. He grew up there, and he goes, do you still have Splash Day? Apparently, Splash Day is the annual adult-oriented enormous beach party celebration on the Gulf Coast. So Bush says, you still have Splash Day. They all laugh. And he says, you have to be a baby boomer to know what I'm talking about. And they laugh again. And he says, I'm not saying whether I came or not on Splash Day. I'm just saying, do you have Splash Day? And there's laughter. And apparently, Bush was not aware that it's a fully gay and lesbian event now. Maybe when he was younger, it was just a...
Or maybe he did know.
I don't know.
Hey, look, you know, some people are making more than a little thing out of this holding hands with Prince Abdullah. Now, that's supposed to be a Saudi tradition. And certainly, you know, there have been no overt signs that George W. Bush himself might have experimented in that regard. But apparently, maybe he just forgot.
You can go to www.houstonsplash.com if you want to get involved with the big Splash Day movement.
Maybe he just never knew they were all gay people. he just thought it was a thing, you know.
He was wasted.
Yeah.
I don't know who did it, but it felt good.
Yeah,
I don't know what the story is there. But here's an interesting story, because I think high schools and even elementary schools, apparently junior high schools, has certainly changed since I went, you know, in terms of what is and isn't sexy, or what is expected, or what women expect out of themselves. Apparently, steroid use is up like a lot, but with 9 year old, with girls from 9 to however old, to in their 20s.
Yeah.
And apparently, not just athletes, a lot of female athletes are taking them at all ages, but some of these women are taking them in order to, they say the profile is similar to the anorexic mindset.
Yeah.
They're taking them to get ripped, to get buff, to get the type of bodies that they see in magazines. Now, I don't know about you, but I like the women that I appreciate the most. I prefer them to look like women.
Yeah.
Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong. But see, when you put Jessica Alba and all the rest of these people in these videos with these ripped abs that they show all through the videos, people think that, well, you know, I need to get ripped abs too. Now, I'm way too old for ripped abs myself.
You're giving up on the dream, right?
I'm giving up on the dream, man. I had it once, but it's gone. But see, what's interesting about this, Mark, is that these are, you know, they're taking male sex hormones.
Yeah.
That's what this stuff is.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure that these kids actually understand. First of all, you need to ask yourself, where are kids getting access to roids? I mean, you know, how does a 9-year-old access steroids? You know, it's not like talking about, well, I want to go out and score this or score that. How do you get to somebody and say, well, you know, at recess?
I guess that, like any other drug, that once it hits if there's a market for it, it'll find its way onto the school ground somehow. Or maybe they have big brothers. Who the hell knows how they're getting it? But the repercussions are a beard, a penis. There's many. It seems to me that it's not the right direction to go in. I don't know.
They're saying 5% of high school girls and 7% of middle school girls have experimented at least once with anabolic steroids.
Huh. Isn't that interesting?
Stuff that you cannot use in professional sports at this point. One time it was legal. But, I mean, you're talking about now side effects that include severe acne, smaller breasts, a deeper voice, irregular periods, excess facial and body hair, depression, paranoia, and those little fits of anger we like to call roid rage.
Okay, but the abs. You know
the
what
abs.
I mean? So you got this weird girl walking down the hall that's got a beard, zits. Okay, she's talking to herself. She's miserable, probably crying. But she's got her low-cut pants and abs.
And abs.
And she thinks she's sexy.
Well,
sad. What were you going to say, Kayla?
Wait, but you can't grow a penis. Can you?
No, I don't think so.
I don't know. Who knows at this point?
Probably not in the right place.
No.
Is that a skin tag? Oh my God! There's a penis growing out of my neck.
Uh-oh.
It's a very dangerous thing. And I just is this the evolution of anorexia? Is this where we're going? Is this the next phase of this? It seems. Is it really as prominent? Is it really going on as much as they say? I mean, what is the wave of this?
Well, I mean, 5 to 7%, ironically enough, are precisely the parameters that they said were there in Major League Baseball. That 5 to 7% of the ball players in Major League Baseball tested positive for steroids. They never named anybody, but it's approximately the same amount. That's the thing that's scary. You're talking about kids here. Now, in some cases, one study says parents themselves are supplying these kids with steroids.
Whoa,
they ought
whoa,
to
whoa.
Be locked locked up.
Well, if you're a parent and you're supplying your kid with steroids, give us a call and tell us why. 866-303-2270. If you have any input on this new evolution in terms of female body image issues and what's being promoted and if you know that's happening and any issues at all, give us a call at 866-303-2270. And, is there someone on the phone now?
Uh-oh.
Okay, Dan, how are you, Dan? In New York, listening to 1190. What's up?
Hey.
Hey, Mark. One of the things that women do get after prolonged steroid use, they found this out with East German athletes, are extremely enlarged penis-like clitoris.
Uh-huh.
So,
oh, my God.
Uh-oh.
Well, we've really taken it to a new high.
No, he's right, though.
I know he is. I think I know he is. I don't know if I knew that. So, well, that's good information. Thank you, Dan. Thank you for calling. So, if you're looking for that as a woman,
people aren't looking. Let's hope they're not looking.
Why
for
am
that.
I being all of a sudden? I'm uncomfortable. I just don't think we've breached this topic here on this show before. But Chris is. What's the matter, Chris?
I don't know. I mean, I've dated women that had sort of large things.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, here we go.
Yeah, you sure? Sure. Where'd you date them? What's over on the west
your
side?
Your girlfriend must not be up yet.
Were you over in the meatpacking? How long were the dates?
And I have to say, my girlfriend.
Yeah.
Has taken steroids because she's very small, and she took it when she was 8 or 9.
Uh-huh.
But she has no sort of large anything down there.
Well, I tell you, I would have thought that I would have tried them, but I never found it appealing. Even though I wanted a six pack, and there's still part of me that thinks that I'm going to have one.
Your brother has, right?
My brother did. He called and he said he had tried it, but I didn't notice any difference. I think you still have to be pretty committed to doing the work in order to get them to show any sort of to see any difference.
Well, you know what's amazing about this is the last time we talked about steroids on the air,
mm-hmm.
We did get a number of people who called who were like pretty laid back about steroid use. Said, hey, remember that guy that called from Australia?
Yeah. Oh, sure.
Said, yeah, hey, you know.
Yeah, I only use them every couple of months for about a month just to get back into shape, and then I don't have a problem. I just use them, you know, like 6 months a year. Mm-hmm. Every day I shoot them before I go to the gym. But I don't have a problem. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, if you have input on this story, we'll talk to you in just a second. 866-303-2270. You're listening to Air America Radio.
Join the morning sedition. Right now, call 866-303-2270.
What?
That's 866-303-2270.
You don't know until you've tried this.
Morning sedition on Air America Radio.
Damn good.
Absolutely free. Even the phone call is free. Call 877-757-2668. That's 877-757-2668. Call right now.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. Here we go. I write down my dreams every night to bring to my therapist on Thursday. This is last night. Here we go. So I meet Jesus for coffee, and he's with this guy I'd never seen before. Jesus says, Mark, this is Jeffrey. Jeffrey has on a pink polo shirt with the collar turned up and bright green pants. I say, hi. Hey, Jeffrey. So how do you know Jesus? Jeffrey says, he's my partner. I blink and I say, excuse me? He says it again. He's my partner. Jesus says, do you have a problem with that, Mark? I say, no, but by partner, do you mean that in some kind of poetic sense or what? Jesus says, well, what if it means exactly what you think it means? It's fine. I just didn't know, you know. Know what? That you were, I was what? Gay, all right? Gay, Jesus. I didn't know you were gay. You think I'm gay? I never said I was gay. Okay, I get it. Okay, I get it. You never married, the whole disciples thing. Would it change my teachings, Mark, if I were gay? Would you just stop listening to me if I were a big flaming queen, Mark? I said, no, Jesus, no. But Jeffrey here said he is your partner. Mark Riley is your partner? Are you two lovers? No! Why are you messing with me, Jesus? Is this some kind of test? Is that what this is, a test? Does this seem like a test to you, Mark? I'm getting confused, okay? And I say, all right, look, hold it. New line of attack. Jeffrey, are you gay? Jeffrey says, no, why would you think that? But Jesus is your partner. Yes, we figure skate together. You should see this man on the ice. I say, okay, so you're both straight, but you skate together. She says, that's right, Mark. Are you satisfied now? I say, well, one last question. What are your skating outfits like? I woke up and my bed was filled with sequins.
Ooh.
Take some calls. We've got Dante listening to 1190 here in New York. Good morning, Dante.
What's up, Dante?
Hey, Mark. What's happening? What's up, Mark?
Is this the Dante I know?
Yes, it is.
How you doing, buddy? What's on your mind, man?
I just want to say first, Mark is an incredible comic. He's one of my favorite comics, and he makes me feel like I'm not funny every time I see him.
That's nice, man. That's a very nice thing to say. So you, I know you. You probably had some experience in the circles you run in with the steroids issue. What's up with that?
Okay, first of all, I don't use steroids, but I have used it when I was younger. I'm 313 pounds. I got a 850 bench, but I've been working. I'm 38 years old. I've been working out since I was 16 years old.
Yeah. So
my biggest problem is that the only reason why I wouldn't use steroids is because they're illegal and you get them off the black market and they're just a lot of times they're just not safe.
Yeah.
But when you think about women and the images of women, the gastric bypass, the implants.
Mm-hmm.
All these things are where women who have no relevant change in their in health conscious ideals.
Right.
All of that stuff is legal. Why wouldn't it be okay for a guy, say your age, Mark?
Yeah.
to be able to go to a doctor and get a cycle of steroids to change their body image, because you still have to work out. You still have to change your diet. You still have to do cardiovascular. It's a life-changing decision, and what that does is it increases your recovery time, and it also increases your ability to build muscle and to change your body image.
That's a good point. I mean, it doesn't address completely why, you know, it's not good for 9-year-old girls to do steroids.
I definitely don't think that 9 years, but the fact that it's illegal is on a black market scale where it's accessible to younger kids, because any guy who's gonna sell it to whoever has the money for it.
But
all anabolic steroids are not illegal, are they?
Well,
I don't know that. Remember, there's some anabolic steroids you can still get with a doctor's prescription.
Right. Well, I think the question is, you can get steroids, but they use them to treat certain ailments. But I mean, I guess it's a slippery slope again. The issue is you know, are they addictive? How do you control it? When does somebody get out of control? Dante, I know him a long time. He's a comic and he's a huge guy. Mm-hmm. You know, he used to be a bouncer. I mean, the dude, and he uses it in his act, but he is huge.
Okay.
And this is a guy that knows that, and he brought it up. I thought he was going to say, well, why can't you just go to a doctor, Mark, and get fake breasts? You know, I guess I could. I would feel awkward about it. But I think the question he asked is legitimate. Is there a way that, you know, you can use steroids and be prescribed by a doctor and have to, you know, just to maintain a certain amount of he seems to think that if you use steroids that they're actually healthy on some level if you don't.
Oh yeah, no, that
do.
I understand. But see, what about the rage part? What about what it does to you mentally?
Right.
If you're not careful. Now, I'm not saying it happens to everyone all the time, but there have been a couple of very notable cases here in New York where there's been the implication of steroids and some really ugly
stuff. We've got Darlene listening to 1190 here in New York. How are you, Darlene? You have some input here?
Hey, Darlene.
I do. How you doing?
Good.
All right.
I can hear you. Thank you for broadcasting over the phone so I'm not bored while I'm going to work.
Sure.
I've used them.
Yeah.
I'm a bodybuilder. I'm in amazing shape.
Yeah.
I don't use them anymore.
Uh-huh.
But the idea is that they are illegal, but they do work. They're more than effective. They're really amazing.
Okay.
And there's a great deal of research on the net. One of the places you can look is the steroid Bible. I'm not advocating it, but what I am saying is that they are promoting supplements which don't work and a whole bunch of other stuff which is really ineffective or dangerous, like surgery and stuff like that. For body image.
But, Darlene, what about guys like Lyle Alzado who, you know, before he died, said steroids was the reason?
I hate to say this, but I was told that isn't the reason.
Yeah, I heard that, too. I heard that, too.
But let's talk about the way a woman feels and ways girls look. There's a tremendous amount of pressure
mm-hmm.
that if, as your friend Dante says, these women also work out and eat right and get strong, they will be one heavily empowered person when they grow up, or men.
Yeah.
It's not a magic pill at all. And in fact, in terms of the roid rage, it does happen. I've been a victim. I've seen it. Mm-hmm. It does happen, but that's when more times than usual they're abused.
Right, right.
And since they're so illegal, it's just like any other abusive drug.
Absolutely,
yes,
got
they
it.
They are addictive. They are addictive.
Got to regulate it.
Physically.
Thank you very much, Charlene.
Thanks, Charlene.
Wow, so that's some interesting calls coming in. I have to, you know.
She said they're addictive. They can cause the rage, but they're good.
Well, let's take some more calls after this. 866-303-2270, and we'll talk a little bit more about this. We've also got, you know, some interesting stuff that the Democrats are doing in the Senate.
Yeah.
And much more here on Air America Radio, my friends.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
So join us here Sunday night on Air America Radio.
The revolution starts now.
Thirty-four past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. We're taking calls about the apparent wave of abuse of steroids in women in middle school, high school, junior high. Women or girls 9 years old and above using steroids to bulk up for athletics, but also to make their body more what they want it to be. They aspire to have a six-pack, to be lean, to be without body fat, to be what the new model of beauty is now being represented as in magazines, on music videos, what you see around. I tell you, I've always been somebody, I like Zoftic people. I like bigness. I like tall and big. I don't like lean. It's weird to me and hard. Not for me, no. But, you know, I do, in talking to the couple of people that we talked to before, I do understand what it feels like to be empowered by physical exercise and to feel like you're doing something right by your body, for your body. I do not see that the steroids necessarily are that. I understand the argument that if they are prescribed by a physician to bulk up or to, accentuate.
They can accelerate the healing process. There are certain steroids that you can get prescribed by a doctor because they help, they help cure stuff.
But I think the conversation we had with Dante and also with our other caller, that woman, was her name Darlene, I believe, is that, why shouldn't it be allowed if it's done safely? I mean, they do allow, the surgery where you have liposuction, you have the tying off or the removing of part of the intestine to lose weight, you have fake breasts, you have breast implants. There's so many different other vanity medical procedures that are allowed. You know, why not allow people who are willing to do this, take the risk and do it safely, in the recommended amount? Why not have that allowed?
Well, some people are going to argue you could say the same thing about heroin.
Mm-hmm.
But why not, if people take it safely, why not let them use it?
Because generally it doesn't make you look better. Why is that guy sleeping? Is this a time to be sleeping at work? Why is he sleeping on the train as well? Why is
By the way, there are many conservatives
that
who believe heroin ought to be legal. William F. Buckley
thinks that heroin ought to be legal.
Has been a long-time advocate for the legalization of all drugs, including heroin.
To stop crime.
No, just so, because he doesn't think government should be involved in people's lives at that level.
Well, I always thought that the argument was, if you make it legal or at least easy for them to get when necessary, that they wouldn't break into your house and take your television to get it.
Mm.
It stifles the ecosystem of crime.
That may be one of the arguments, but that wasn't Buckley's main one.
Oh, it was just that the government shouldn't be involved.
The government should not be involved. He's a conservative.
Why ruin some guy's buzz who's sitting there picking a sore on the corner of 2nd and B? That guy should have the freedom to do that.
Well, no, he wants
country.
To be able to, if you use it safely, you shouldn't be picking sores. Just like with steroids, use them safely. Does that mean you don't get roid rage?
Yeah, I think they're overestimating the integrity of the human spirit when giving addictive substances. First of all, if you're a guy that's saying, I want to be the size of a car, you're not really, you're not thinking in reasonable terms. And why is that appealing? Why is it appealing to be able to, to lift a truck? Why is that?
Because if you're a cop, you can lift a suspect.
I guess, but it seems so impractical. You know, I mean, if the guy just works in an office and he shows up, you know, like all ripped and huge, I mean, all that's really saying is, hey, someone's got some free time.
Yeah.
Someone's spending some time at the gym. I don't know. I tend to disagree with the argument as somebody who is prone towards addiction. Christy, listening to WKOX in Brookline, Massachusetts, I'm assuming. Hey, how are you?
Yeah, hi. How you guys doing?
Good. What's on your mind?
Well, this is funny. I'm a high school biology teacher,
mm-hmm.
and I'm on my way to class right now.
Okay.
So I'm going to ask my girls about it. But one of the things...
ask the one with the mustache.
Oh, see.
I'm sorry.
One of the things, it's sort of funny that your callers before, that the steroids, if they're taken before puberty,
mm-hmm.
one of the things that happens is growth plate seal.
Mm-hmm.
So kids stop growing in height.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But
yeah.
but they look, they're the buffest little things.
Yeah,
they are the buffest little things you're going to see with zits and,
that's,
you know,
one ripped
dangling.
Dwarf.
Yeah.
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 Mm-hmm. And so, and the idea that you can take them safely is ridiculous. It's one thing to do sort of mechanical things to your body, but we're talking hormones, which have just huge systemic effects.
Yeah, you're messing with the system in a way that you really can't control.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things that steroids definitely does is it suppresses your immune system.
That's not good. So you have sick, ripped dwarfs. Yeah.
So, I mean, we have to sort of question, you know, why people are taking them. And I deal with a lot of students who have eating disorders,
mm-hmm.
and it's just, it's phenomenal what it does to them. And it's very hard to recover from. And now you give me this piece of news, and now I'm going to have to start looking at who's short in my class.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, you got the we got this off of the, you know, it's from the Associated Press. We found it in the news today. It's a real story. What are some of the other things that you're seeing with the kids in terms of what they're, you see eating disorders and drug use?
Oh God, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I work with special ed kids too, who are severely depressed, who are addicted. And you see a lot of all sorts of body image issues, and
you think that most of that, how much of it, from where you're sitting, is from cultural impetus? Like, how much of it is because these kids are comparing themselves to other people, and how much of it is just psychological problems that come from the home?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
It's all of that, and probably some genetic components too involved, in, you know, sort of being potentially, you know, at risk for these things, too.
Okay.
But a lot of it, I mean, they just sit there and look at these girl magazines and...
How old are these kids?
About it.
How
They're
old?
High school kids.
Okay.
High school.
Well, thanks
so
for your call, Christy.
Range.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, you take care.
Thanks a lot.
That's interesting to talk to somebody who, you know, who deals with kids. Because, I mean, I know, like, you know, look at me. I'm a man, and I had body image problems. But I think that everybody has them, you know. Everybody wants to be a movie star. Everyone wants to look better. Everyone wants to be pretty. Everyone wants to be accepted. Everyone wants to be the one that everyone says, hey, that guy's cool. Michelle, listening to in Pennsylvania, to Sirius, how are you?
Hi, how are you? Hi, Mark. Hey, Mark. Good.
Hi, Michelle.
What's up?
Well, Mark Riley, you actually know my Aunt Aisha.
Mm.
Oh, sure.
Yeah,
Aisha Grace?
Yeah.
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm her niece. I'm calling. I am the mother of a 16-year-old daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it starts at home and how you build your child's self-esteem.
Okay.
And I believe that my daughter probably would never take steroids or anything that would harm her body in order to look better, because I have a very vain child.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to worry about that. If kids are out there taking things to enhance their look, it has a lot to do with self-esteem.
I think you're right.
It has a lot to do with how the parent views themselves as a role model to your child. I don't understand why a child would take something if you're not being a good role model for your child and building their self-esteem.
I think you're absolutely right. I think that a lot of reasons is, you know, either peer pressure or they are insecure. Good for you for giving your kid healthy self-esteem. I know that it's very important. It's nice to hear someone be proud of a vain kid. Thanks a lot, Michelle.
Thanks,
Take care.
Michelle. Say hi to your aunt for me, will you?
I sure will. Take care.
Okay.
Okay, bye-bye. What else we got there, Chris?
Oh, Mark, actually we have Future Mark on line one.
Future Mark? Cool, I love that guy.
Hey, buddy, what's
up? Hey, buddy, what's up? Always great to hear from you. So what's going on 50 years from now today?
Well, not much. So what year are you on?
It is 2005, my friend.
All right, so didn't Bush just meet with the Saudi oil guy at his ranch?
Yeah, that was this week.
Okay, so you're still using oil then. Well, you only got a couple of years of that left.
Oh, cool. So we figured out a way to stop using oil. That's fantastic.
Dude, don't get too excited. The thing we replaced oil with, quinzenine, much worse, buddy.
What's quinzenine made of?
Well, man, it's complicated. All right, some really bad guys did some incredibly unethical things to a water molecule in a lab owned by the Bush family. I mean, nasty stuff.
Hey, dude, what's going on? I'm losing you here, man. Future Mark, are you there? I'm losing you.
Is that better? I just had to raise the house a little bit.
Raise the house? Oh, man, don't tell me you're listening to hip-hop in the future.
No, man. I literally had to raise my house. My antenna was submerged. Yeah, look, all right, let me explain. Within a year of introducing that fuel alternative, quinzenine, the emissions made a big donut hole in the ozone, and the ice caps melted in like 2 weeks, all right? The surfing was awesome. The catastrophic death, not so awesome.
Oh, man.
So with that and the Earth's wobble and all, we get floods every couple of weeks. All the houses are on hydraulic stilts. And, oh, yeah, by the way, hip-hop?
Yeah?
It's so over, man.
Cool.
It's all about the whale songs now.
Whale songs?
Yeah, and it helps that there's usually one swimming in your backyard. You hear that? Oh, crap. That humpback's at my bird feeder again. I just put a new whale shield on it and everything. Man. Get out of that feeder, you fat ass.
Oh, my God, man. Did you shoot a whale? I mean, aren't they endangered?
God, I wish. Whales are like rats in 2050. They're all over the place.
Oh.
I mean, some people ride them to work now.
Wow. Wow, that's freaking me out a little.
Hey, man, I'm going to have to go.
Hey, wait. Before you go, anything I need to know?
Okay, sometime next week, a man in a green hat is going to approach you on the street and ask you for the time. You need to punch him in the face and then run like hell.
What if I don't?
Did you see the movie The Ring? Just do it.
Okay, I will, buddy. I'll talk to you later, man.
Call you next week. Get out of my yard, you stupid whale!
things are weird for me in the future.
Yeah, I think so.
Let's take this call from Joe listening to the mic in Madison, Wisconsin. How are you, Joe?
What's up, Joe?
Hey, Mark, you got to find the mail.
I know. Uh-oh. I got one. Sorry, Joe. I don't know. We usually get this stuff brought right to the office. When did you send it?
Well, I sent it Monday. I got a confirmation that it arrived there yesterday morning.
Uh-oh. Somebody stole our mayonnaise?
Somebody tasted the stuff and ran off with it.
Well, let me explain, Joe. Let me explain to other people. We had this huge discussion about Hellman's mayonnaise and Best Food mayonnaise because, Dan Patrick insisted that Hellman's was, the only mayonnaise to eat. And
I
said
agree. From the store, I agree.
Yeah, but they're just two different kinds. I'm just trying to hit people who might have missed the very engaging conversation we had about mayonnaise. And, Joe, you reached out and you sent us some homemade mayonnaise that is now somewhere.
I'm sorry.
We're going to go find maybe Al Franken took it. Manny,
hey,
that's good mayonnaise.
It's got dill and Hungarian paprika and all that. And it's in freezer pack. It's good for a couple of days there. So if you find it, you're okay.
Okay, well, Joe, I'm going to go look for it right now.
All right.
And if Franken took it, I'm going to get on him. And if
for
he,
sure.
Well, maybe I could get his endorsement.
What? Okay, you know what, Joe? Now you're not even going to know. I'm going to say I like it anyway.
Oh, wow.
No, I'm kidding, buddy. You take care, man. Thanks
okay.
for sending. I'm going to go find it right
Thanks,
now.
Thanks, Joe.
Okay.
All right. We'll be back with actual politics after this. We're going to talk about.
Are
we? Yeah. Okay. The Senate is going to. They're actually doing something for the people of this country. The Democrats in the Senate have laid it out, and we will lay it out for you after this at 46 past the hour. Air America Radio.
From Monkey Python, and you're listening to Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Morning's Edition. They're not the Messiah, they're very naughty boys on Air America Radio.
Evaluate for 30 days. Call now 1-800-900-2657. That's 1-800-900-2657.
The 51 past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. We're going to talk about the Senate here in just a second. Let's just take one more quick call. Mindy listening to KOKE in Austin, Texas. Good morning, Mindy.
Hi, Mindy.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Pretty good. What's on your mind?
I just called in because I saw the documentary on HBO last night.
Oh, yeah.
And I was really excited to find out that there's a station here in Austin.
Well, welcome aboard.
Welcome.
Thank you.
I just wanted to tell you guys, thank you so much for what you're doing.
Oh, you bet. And thank you for listening. And we'll talk to you tomorrow, I hope.
Oh, sure.
Okay, Mindy, take it easy.
Take care. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Riley, you're going to have to see that documentary eventually.
I know, because I don't know what she's talking about.
It was on again. My wife said, it's on again. I'm like, you going to watch it? She's like, no, I've seen it twice. And I'm like, okay.
Left of the Dial is the name of the documentary.
Okay. It's on HBO all month. It documents the early days of Air America Radio and some of the problems we had and some of the problems we transcended and moved through. It's interesting, after every showing of that, you know, we get some positive feedback, and then we also get the weird emails that are like, you guys are idiots. You, Marin's a prima donna. Blah, 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 blah. I'm not a prima donna.
Made them all know mine.
I'm just a little aggravated. I was learning a new thing. You know, it's a difficult birthing process. So let's get into this. It's Bill Frist is trying to emulate his hero. George Bush is acting as if he is not willing to compromise on anything. He's not going to budge. I think as time goes on, Riley, we're going to see what flip-floppers these idiots really are, because they keep trying to change your message, change your frame, change how they're presenting things, because they're sort of scrambling. But Frist doesn't want to make any deals, so Harry Reid says, oh, yeah, well, surprise.
Well, see, this is where Frist is going to get caught up in his own foolishness.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know the man wants to be president in 2008. I know he wants to make sure he, you know, panders to the religious right, who wants this filibuster thing lifted so they can put right-wing zealot judges in virtually every court in America. But let's leave that aside for the moment.
Okay.
What Frist is asking for here, and he has continued to say this as he's moved away from the original frame on this, well, we want to have up and down votes for these people. We want to be able, the Senate should have the right, and that goes to that whole constitutional thing. They should have the right to be voted upon. They shouldn't be bottled up like this. People shouldn't reject them because of this, that, or the other, or because, God forbid, they're incompetent, which is the case with some of these people, by the way. But they want an up and down vote. So what Harry Reid has countered with is the invocation of this Rule 14.
Now, why didn't we know about this before? This just amazes me. As I read this thing today, and you're a smart guy. We got smart guys working here. We all know, you know, that this is how government works, or on some degree. And then almost like magic, they pull this thing out of the sleeve. Surprise! Rule 14, and I'm seeing it for the first time. Are you seeing it for the first time, Riley?
Oh, yeah, because this is Senate procedural stuff. This is stuff that, these guys essentially do this every day. And it's out of the sight of the American people. This is how the body functions.
So they had to take this out. Some guys had to go, whoa, get the manual.
Well, because usually it works on tradition. Traditionally in the Senate, the majority party sets the agenda.
Okay.
Now, that's by tradition. That is not a rule. It's not cast in stone. So what Harry Reid did was pull out a rule that says, well, you know, we can set the agenda and then force the Republicans, rather than deal with these different issues like women's health care, veterans benefits, fiscal responsibility, relief at the gas pump, education, et cetera, rather than dealing with that as amendments that are tacked onto, for example, appropriations bills or other, because that's how a lot of this stuff gets dealt with now.
And it doesn't get through that easily, then it's not heard about. And this way, this is a brilliant way to not only counter the Republicans, but to showcase the fact that the Democrats indeed do have an agenda. We do have core values. We do have things we want to work for. And in comparison to what the Republicans are trying to do and what they're hung up over, which is, you know, plow through activist judges who want to restrict, you know, reproductive rights and stop gay marriage and honor corporations over individuals. This agenda that the Democrats have presented looks very human to me.
Well, it's extremely human. For example, the Retired Pay Restoration Act of 2005, this is just one of them. This will assist disabled veterans who under the current law have to choose between either receiving their retirement pay or disability compensation. That is a real gut bucket issue for people who have served their country.
And not only that, it brings into light the fact that Republicans are not honoring our soldiers when they come home. They are closing down veterans' hospitals. They don't have enough resources in the mental health field to honor these guys when they come home to take care of them properly. We have a president that won't even go to a military funeral. And now the Democrats are saying, well, look, we want to introduce some legislation here that would assist disabled veterans. This is a concern that the Republicans have pushed aside. So it's a strong statement what they're doing here, and very effective. I'm very excited about it.
Well, yeah, and it is going to, at some point, force the Republicans to deal with this nuclear option. But by the way, nuclear option was not, no matter what you hear from other people, coined by Democrats. You know who coined the phrase nuclear option?
It was the guy with the bad hair.
Trent Lott from Mississippi.
The hair hat.
Yeah. Mr. I need another military base in my state so I can get people to work.
When we come back, let's go over these point for point, because some people are always like, well, what's the Democratic agenda? Well, we got it right here in front of us.
We're going to tell you all about it, and we've got filmmaker and raconteur Melvin Van Peebles coming up on Air America Radio.
Good morning, geniuses. It's 6 past the hour, Air America Radio's morning sedition program. I'm Mark Maron. That's my buddy, Mark Riley.
Hi.
Good morning to you, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, and, of course, lurking conservatives looking for some relief from their strange, narrow-minded, repressive agenda, that weird feeling of always being right but knowing deep down that you're wrong. Join MoveOn.org's nationwide rallies against the right wing's anti-American drive to end the filibuster. Today, the rallies will take place across the country. Go to the links page of MorningSedition.com to find the rally nearest you. I, Mark Maron, will be performing in Cincinnati next weekend, the weekend after this one at Go Bananas, May 6th and 7th. So if you're listening to 1530 WCKY, the Revolution of Talk Radio, I invite you personally to come down and hang out, see me. I'll be doing four shows. Go to MorningSedition.com for ticket info. Now, we are talking and have been talking a bit about this new Democratic response to the nuclear option, which, as Mark Riley said previous, though it has been in the paper as being put on Democrats that we came up with that phrase, or we,
yes.
I don't need to talk collectively for the we of Democrats, that Democrats came up with the nuclear option phrase. Not true. It is not true, and there's been documented facts that it was Trent Lott.
Trent Lott has admitted it.
Yes. It's interesting how that, I think that's journalistic irresponsibility. I'd like to think of it as a conspiracy, but when I was looking at some of the articles that we saw on Media Matters in terms of how it evolved, it's just irresponsibility.
Well, yeah, it's not fact-checking properly.
Exactly. Now, let's talk about this. So, the nuclear option, Harry Reid has presented this secret rule number, what is it? What
number
it?
14.
Is it Senate rule number 14? Is that how it's a...
Yeah, it's Senate rule number 14. Now, what we should say about them, for people who aren't really clear about what the nuclear option is, the nuclear option would be a change that would allow judicial nominees to come out of committee, or not even out of committee, to be confirmed with not a 60-vote majority, but rather a pure majority.
Now, so not a two-thirds of the House. With the nuclear option, it could just be, you know, 50-50.
51.
Yeah, 51.
51 votes, or in some cases, if it was 50-50, Dick Cheney would be the person that would end up casting the deciding vote as vice president.
Right, and the reason the filibuster is in place is so that the majority does not bully the minority and just destroy the whole checks and balances system. And the reason why a filibuster is important is it becomes the only tool of a minority to continue debate and not let the one-party rule thing occur.
Occur, yeah. And Bill Frist, who is so hot to get these last 10. Remember, there have been over 200 nominees on the part of the President of the United States. I believe it's like 215 or 214. 204 of them have already been confirmed.
Right.
These are not liberal judges. These are generally conservative judges. The argument is over the final 10.
And Harry Reid said, look, we'll give you a couple, but we're not going to give you all of them. Let's make a deal. Frist said, no deal.
Well, see, I think that's just a negotiating ploy on Frist's part. I think he's holding out for a better deal. Plus, you know, he is still politically trying to say to the religious right, who, of course, he addressed at, quote, Justice Sunday this past week, I'm still in there fighting for you. I'm not going to compromise on this. I'm not going to, you know, it would seem a little unseemly for Frist to have addressed these people and turn around and compromise 72 hours later. So he's trying to hold his ground. But the fact is, both sides here, both Frist and Reed, have admitted they've been negotiating. So the fact is, if they weren't negotiating about some kind of compromise, some kind of middle ground here, what is Frist talking about?
Exactly. I like the Senate Rule 14, though. This is the Democrats' reaction to them to the stopping the filibuster, which is essentially that the Democrats have found this rule in the Senate that basically lets them set the agenda, which is not what the minority does. Usually they have to make amendments and attach them onto larger pieces.
Larger bills, yeah.
And let the majority, set the agenda. So now Harry Reid has said, well, with this, we can set the agenda. And the reason that this is brilliant is because at this point in time, the Republicans are sort of, they're floundering, they're on a fence, they're trying to accommodate the religious right, they're also trying to push, you know, legislation through that helps corporations and businesses. They're not doing much for people, for regular people. And what this allows the Democrats to do is says, in response to them talking about stopping, you know, to changing the rules of the Senate to accommodate them and their agenda, to making them look like corrupt, selfish bastards that they are, you know, we're going to, you know, quietly present our agenda.
Well, see, the other side of this is, and this could make for some really hot times in the upper house over the next few weeks. Number one, to invoke rule number 14, the senator must be recognized by the presiding officer. Now, that could, in theory, mean that the presiding Republican would simply not recognize the senator that was trying to invoke Rule 14. Just ignore him. Not call on him. Just like somebody, you know, somebody being at a White House press conference. They don't end up calling on him.
Oh, my God.
They could try to do it that way. Now, the other thing is that anything that is placed directly on the Senate calendar, because that's the other maneuver here, instead of going to committee, these kinds of things that they're talking about here, women's health care, veterans' benefits, these would go directly to the Senate floor, bypassing the committee system of the upper house. That's another reason why it's not invoked that often, because most of these things would go to committee before they got to the whole floor. Well,
and that gets it on the Senate record.
Yes, it gets it on the Senate record. Now, there is no guarantee that that these things will be considered on the floor. It must be called up for consideration either by unanimous consent or someone must make a motion, and then the issue would be debated.
Well, let's talk about the nine bills, because a lot of people, you know, even within the Democratic Party, certainly the Republicans say it all the time, they've got no agenda, they're just playing politics. No, they're playing politics and they have an agenda. The nine bills that are part of this, of them invoking Senate Rule 14, include women's health care. The Prevention First Act of 2005 will reduce the number of unintended pregnancies and abortions by increasing funding for family planning and ending health insurance discrimination against women. Okay.
That's going to be the kind of one that Patty Murray and Hillary Clinton and people like that have been pressing for a while.
Yeah. Veterans benefits. The Retired Pay Restoration Act of 2005 will assist disabled veterans who, under current law, must choose to either receive their retirement pay or disability compensation. Fiscal responsibility. Democrats will move to restore fiscal discipline to government by spending and extend government spending and extend the pay-as-you-go requirement. Relief at the pump. Democrats plan to halt the diversion of oil from the markets to the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. By releasing oil from the reserve through a swap program, the plan will bring down prices at the pump. Education. Democrats plan to strengthen Head Start and child care programs, improve elementary and secondary education, provide a roadmap for first-generation low-income college students, provide college tuition relief for students and their families, address the need for math, science and special education teachers, and make college affordable for all students. Jobs. Democrats will work in support of legislation that guarantees overtime pay for workers and sets a fair minimum wage. Energy markets. Democrats work to prevent Enron-style market manipulation of electricity. And corporate taxation. Democrats make sure companies pay their fair share of taxes to the U.S. government instead of keeping profits overseas. Now, this is real issue stuff.
It's real issue stuff, and the Republicans know that it's, you know, the introduction of these kinds of measures directly onto the Senate floor puts them on C-SPAN, going on record against, you know, not forcing veterans to make a Hobson's choice, between retirement pay or disability compensation, to do something serious about reducing the number of unintended pregnancies and abortions, to try and stop this diversion of oil from the markets to the strategic petroleum reserve, something, by the way, that the president has steadfastly refused to do. The Republicans then would have their feet put to the fire, if this plan goes properly, by being on the record, on TV, arguing against these things.
Against things that are good for people.
Yeah, now, you know, when it comes to the Enron-style manipulation of electricity, there's been far too much out here in the ether, including a devastating documentary that has detailed and chronicled what Enron did to the state of California in terms of manipulating all those electricity rates and making consumers pay through the nose for power out there. Now, do Republicans seriously want to get up and argue in favor of something people associate with Ken Lay and Enron?
What's interesting, like all those Texas Republicans, I mean, how can they stand behind someone like Tom DeLay knowing that he was partially owned by Enron and that that's what Texas politics represents? Those are the people whose pockets the politicians zero in. These are people that, you know, sort of intentionally and shamelessly, you know, bankrupted a lot of working people.
Yeah.
Had their money and then run through mutual funds and whatnot.
And then in true Tom DeLay style, he said, well, I didn't know. How was I supposed to know this is what they would do? I didn't know. That was Ken Lay's defense. That's Tom DeLay's defense, too.
Well, we'll be back with the War on Brains. Melvin Van Peebles is going to be with us and more of Mark Reilly and I talking to you. 16 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Hi, this is Reverend Barry Lynn from Americans United for Separation of Church and State. If you want to get the truth about the Bush administration's ongoing battle against science and reason, tune in to the War on Brains with Mort Milfington on Morning Sedition, Air America Radio.
Support our troops in Iraq and Afghanistan. Operation Truth. We were there.
Paid for by Operation Truth, Incorporated.
Twenty-one past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Reilly.
Good morning.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Edition. Joe in Wisconsin, we got the mayo, Joe.
Yeah, Joe, it's right here.
I found the mayo, Joe. We'll talk about it in a second. Then you packed it like it was explosives or something. Man, this is a
brilliant,
genius bit of packing. With the mayo. It's still cold.
Yep.
Wow. Still cold. And I'll read you a letter in just a second. But first, every week we bring you the latest news from the front lines of the five-year global war being waged by the Bush administration. Here with today's dispatch from the War on Brains is war correspondent Mort Milfington.
Dateline, Laredo, Texas. America's fastest growing city and a great place to go across the border to get pills. Deep down in the murky pits of a land they call Texas, the wise voyager knows his path will be littered by many such bogs as Sugarland, Midland, and Crawford. But now a lone beacon of light illuminates this bleak landscape, Laredo. This brave hamlet, after finding itself besieged by an army of brain eaters, is fighting back against the No Child Left Behind Act. For last week, the Laredo School District, or LSD, fired a powerful volley of hurt using the only weapon the Bush administration has ever tried to ban, the lawsuit. In probably the only instance where the concept of states' rights hasn't been used to do things like forcibly return my great-grandfather's slaves to the family plantation, the suit charges the government is violating a federal law by requiring states to spend their own money to pay for No Child Left Behind. The regulation in question, Section 9527, written by the Republicans during the Clinton administration. You hear that? Yeah. It's the sound of Karl Rove being hoisted by his own retard. Keep in mind, Laredo is the first and only district in Texas to take this kind of legal action against the government's own education law. So look forward to a couple of mysterious nuclear waste spills happening there soon. I hear Laredo's got some great waffle houses, so enjoy them while you can. But fear not, you whining, apathetic do-nothings who were too lazy to get off your Sony plasma screen-sized asses to vote in the last election. The nation's largest teachers union, in addition to 9 other school districts from around the country, are also suing the government. So look forward to at least 9 other mysterious nuclear waste spills happening in those places. I hear those towns got some great, insert hilarious local reference here. Yes, imposing an woefully inept educational system upon our independent states, cutting funding for public schools when that system produces morons, and then forcing these states to pay for these indignities are the ingredients of the Bush No Child Left Behind Act. His vanity. Shame. Diabolical. But this is clearly more than just another headache for George Bush and his prissy Secretary of Education, Margaret Spellings, whose name most American school children can't spell. Because now they're going to have to answer to the law. Yeah. Thank goodness our judicial system is still safe as ever, right? What, I missed something again? Great. Franken gets 32 staff members, and I can't even get a friggin' morning paper. Do you really need 10.6 employees per OI? Perhaps someday in the future our children will be able to receive a decent education and answer that important question. But until that time, freedom fighters, you'd best buy a hazmat suit. And that's today's dispatch from the War on Range. Seacrest out.
You're a hard man.
Thank you, Mark.
Get into the zone. AutoZone!
He's been doing that all morning.
The AutoZone thing?
He's been going off. He's going off on. He doesn't even own a car. He's going off on AutoZone.
AutoZone!
See?
See, that's just stuck in there? It's stuck in your head?
Oh, I love that song.
Wow.
That and the Amalgamated Bank song.
Can you do it for us?
Amalgamated Bank.
You know the other
wow.
One?
Yeah,
I know the AutoZone song. Get into the zone, AutoZone!
Okay.
It's a good thing you weren't around during the Crazy Eddie days. I'll tell you that.
Yeah. Hey, what was his big tagline?
His prices are insane.
Insane. Yeah. Well, look, thank you. Take care of yourself.
It's nice. Have a nice trip. See you later. Right to get work.
Go to. Have you been to AutoZone?
I go to AutoZone Live. I hang out there with the kids.
Okay. See you later, man. It's always a pleasure. So here's a letter from Joe. The reason Joe sent us this was because Dan Pashman, myself, Mark Riley, Kalo, we had this long conversation about Hellman's mayonnaise and Best Foods mayonnaise, which are the same thing, different labels on the West and East Coast. And that said, Kalo, apparently, here's a letter from Joe, if I can read this quickly. I never miss a show, love it, and consider it the best on Air America Radio. I need some news, some outrage, and some funding. You guys have a balance and delivery that isn't matched anywhere. You occasionally have a little chit-chat about the ordinary, every kinds of stuff, and recently one of those was mayonnaise. I really like this condiment, Joe says. I always use a condiment. Sorry. I totally agree that the best mayo you can buy is Hellman's. I did, however, hear a disparaging remark about homemade mayo, so I want you to check this out. It's sweet. It's less sweet than Hellman's, so Kalo should find it to go better with meat. I hate the sweet with meat thing, too. Applesauce, pork chops, orange, duck, mint jelly stuff, lamb, all nasty. I know it looks different. He's saying his mayonnaise looks different. It's herbs and spices, and the best way to try it is on a sandwich with chicken or turkey. Sorry, Mark, maybe something like a cucumber sandwich. Or how about gator? Check your local deli or make some tuna salad will be good. So we're going to try it. Thank you, Joe. It's here.
Thanks, Joe.
And he packed it in styrofoam in that stuff that you freeze, the blue ice. Man, I don't even want to unpack it.
It's
genius.
Nice. Pass the cheese, will you?
Yeah, you got it, man. All right, Melvin Van Peebles after this, Air America Radio.
Get in the zone. AutoZone. Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
For you.
I have to get help.
Randy Rhodes on Air America Radio.
I'm going to Republican rehab.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yo.
It's Morning's Edition here on Air America. We're very pleased to have in our studio today a maverick filmmaker, musician, novelist, playwright, and the subject of a new documentary film, How to Eat Your Watermelon in White Company and Enjoy It. The film's director is also here, Melvin Van Peebles. Welcome, sir. Nice to see you, Joe Angio. Welcome to you.
Thanks for
welcome.
Having us.
Hey, thanks for having us, guys.
You yeah, bet. So what brought you guys together and to make this movie? What inspired you, Joe? Did you find Melvin or did he find you? What happened?
Well, I guess I kind of found him. What inspired me to make it was his life. It's just seeing his movie. It's just it's kind of phenomenal and sort of really unbelievable in a way. Because we all know Melvin as the you know, director of Sweet Back's Badass Song,
yeah.
which has put him in film history books. But what really a lot of people don't know is just this crazy, varied career he's had beyond that as a playwright, as a novelist. He wrote five novel French novels.
Riley and I were watching the documentary and just, you know, laughing and having a great time and had no ideas.
And a musician. On and on and on. And actually, I...
Cable car operator.
Don't cable car operator. Car. Navigator on a B-47 carrying the atom bomb, no less.
Yeah.
And I really kind of came, sort of, it was introduced to him through through the back door of his career from an old friend of mine who worked alongside
Melvin.
Oh,
don't use the word back door. Download.
Mid-career.
Yeah, right.
I guess it's a mid-career.
Side door, something like that. Don't talk back door.
We've grown very close over the years.
Yeah. Not that close. So, Melvin, you feel like I was amazed at just how many places you've been, how many things you did, and you know what's going on right now? Are you making any movies right now?
At the moment, I'm just finishing a new CD. That's what I'm doing right now. I'm just finishing a new CD. It's called Still Talking Number 2. And if you know what number 2 is, understand where I'm coming from. And so that's what, and so I'm doing that at the moment. You know, what I liked about the movie, when I saw it, these guys have done a phenomenal amount of research, you know what I mean? And I'd see old French buddies and so forth I hadn't seen for years and all around the world. And then, you know, my American buddies, that's what I really enjoyed about
it. Did you learn some stuff about yourself that you didn't know about yourself?
Not hard.
Well, most of them lied on me. Anybody that said anything bad? There was this Richard Milner, who's a big buddy of mine. Then there's Henry Jarek, and then there's Gloria. All these people, these names keep popping up. And these guys tracked them down.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then there were a couple of lady friends.
There were a few more lady friends who didn't make the cut.
Yeah. They ended up on the cutting room floor, didn't they?
So they started on the cutting room floor.
Yeah.
Now, you know, the thing that's always amazed me about your career has been the fact that you really kind of decided to do something, and whatever you had to do to get to that point, you did it. Whether it was shooting Sweetback and, you know, just kind of shooting until the cops came, which you did a lot of.
Yeah.
Or teaching yourself French. Where did that come from in your background?
Well, I was very fortunate. Everybody says, Melvin, you ain't worth. So I had nothing to lose. So it never frightened me. That was the car of freedom. You know, that was the car to absolute freedom. I would say the thing I'm probably most familiar with is the unknown. Unknown bothered, but every place I went, it was completely unknown to me. So I suppose many times we are stopped by not knowing the answer. Well, what will happen if?
Fear.
Fear.
Yeah.
But if you've never, when I made, for example, Story of a Three-Day Pass, right, I was just up at Harvard, and it was showing that movie, my first feature film. I had never been inside a studio at all. But I went and walked in with this full crew and so forth. And only one person knew that I'd never been inside. I'd been bluffing. I wouldn't bother, but I'd never been inside an airplane until I got in one. What the heck?
So it's not even a matter of fear. The idea that you'd never done it before shouldn't make any difference. That should be thrilling.
Yeah, it's just interesting. Yeah, but it's like when you get up on stage or something. You know, And Joe and Michael and so forth, the two guys really responsible for the movie, they seem to have captured that poor Joe when he came to make the film 8 years ago. Michael, I think they were going to keep it within that context of me up to then. But that's not what happened.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's ultimately, you know, you talk about lack of fear. I think that's really what the film's about is just this sort of the power of fearlessness.
Yeah.
When we started this, like Melvin was saying, you know, we knew we had this story, this backward story to tell, this history. But when we met 7 years ago, Melvin was saying, you know, hey, you know, I'm doing this cabaret act and I'm going to be rehearsing up in my, you know, up in my house. You guys got to come and shoot that. So we got, ah, great. We have an ending to the film. Mm-hmm. 6 months later, it's, hey, I'm shooting this movie in France. This is my first film. You know, we got to go to France and shoot this. 1 year later, I'm getting, you know, this this honor from, you know, from France to become a, you know, a knight in the Legion of Honor there. And it's like, it's just the movie never kept ending. I mean, these things he's talking about now, it's like we have ample opportunity for a sequel.
Well, you know, this is one of the things, and I know this because I know this man for a little while. He is, in many instances, besieged by people who want to know his... I mean, I've been to his house when there have been people coming in his house just kind of asking, how do you do what you do? What's the secret? And they throw, like, how many different projects have you had pitched to you in the last 6 months?
But they're continuing. They're about two a day.
About two every day. Somebody comes up, and they say, look, I got this idea. How do you decide... Which ones you're going to act on? Obviously, Joe came to you with a proposal. Why did you go with him?
Well, but you're taking it from the wrong end of the stick. You see, for example, somebody comes, oh, I need a job. I got to work. That's all right, man. All right. Well, be here at 5 o'clock. Well, I don't know if I can make it in because of the traffic. There's no traffic at 5 o'clock in the morning.
In the morning?
Usually people sort of fade. Now, when... Joe was recommended to me by the producer, who was Michael Solomon. Michael had always been solid with me. And I said, Michael, he's solid? He said, yeah, I like him. That was good enough for me. Then the guys would show on time. They'd do what they said they were going to do. It ain't that hard. But most people come up, man, I got this great idea. All you have to do is raise $40 million, finish writing the book, and we'll split. Your mama. I mean, that's the way it goes down. You know what I mean? Everybody, I got this idea. A guy meets a girl. Isn't that a great idea for a script? Hello, you know what I mean?
Now just need some money.
Yeah.
And you know, he's not exaggerating on that either. That's exactly how it played out when the day that I met him. Because I had this dream about doing this film for a long time. You know, long before I'd ever met Melvin, I had, you know, sort of built up this dossier on him of, you know, it looked like a police file or something. So he must have thought I was a stalker. And so I was, you know, the day that Michael was going to introduce me to Melvin, I was kind of shaking in my boots because here was this thing I've been wanting to do for so long, and all he had to do was say, not interested. And it, just what he said, it was like, you know, Michael vouches for you, I'll do this. But I mean, first words out of his mouth.
Mm-hmm. Now, so, the film, let me just make sure people know where it is. It's the Tribeca Film premiere at the Tribeca Film Festival. Is it 9 p.m. tonight?
Thursday night,
Michael, at the Michael Schimmel Center for the Arts at Pace University. For ticket info, you can go online to TribecaFilmFestival.org. Now, this, like, your son made a film about you, what was that, 2 years ago?
Yeah, Badass. That was one about the actual shooting of Sweetback itself.
Did he get it right?
Yeah, I thought he had it right. I can only answer half of that.
Yeah.
Because what really fascinated me about the film was the events were correct, but also the events had the perspective of a 12, 11, and 12-year-old, how he saw things unfold. So for me, it was fascinating to see that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. What fascinated me about watching the documentary was just that you were in Chicago. You were born in Chicago, mm-hmm. right? And then all of a sudden you're in San Francisco, and then you're in Holland, then you're in France. And what made you go first to Holland? I mean, from San Francisco, you were a cable car driver. You lost that gig, and then you went to Holland, just decided out of nowhere?
No. What happened when I left college, I was in the Air Force, right?
Okay.
And there I was a navigator and bombardier on a bomber.
Okay.
From there, I went to Mexico. Mario was born in Mexico. That's why he's called Mario. then I went to San Francisco. In San Francisco, I wrote a book. And from that book, someone encouraged me to eat some more. He did. Yeah. That's how I went to the movie.
Yeah.
But when I went down to Hollywood with the movie to show my work, they told me that obviously I was incompetent, blah, 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 blah. And so they No, I mean, there's nothing racist about it. I just didn't have what it took. You know?
Yeah.
You know, so anyway, and I had no place to go for a second opinion. I went back to my next love, which was astronomy. So I was in Holland getting my PhD in what you call celestial mechanics, which is a very complicated form of astronomy. And Holland was at the forefront of that type of astronomy at the time.
That's fascinating because you got you're a navigator on a bomber plane that's got the nuclear bomb in there, atom bomb at the time. You end up in Mexico. You have Mario in Mexico. Then you go to San Francisco. You drive a cable car, and then out of nowhere, it's like astronomy. That's amazing.
But they're all connected, you know. We got enough time. He can connect all of these dots that he's laying.
Will we do that when we come back?
No problem.
Okay. All right. 45 past the hour. We're talking to Melvin Van Peebles. We'll be back in a second here on Air America Radio.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your blog. MorningSedition.com. Air America Radio.
On the 90-day trial guarantee. Call 1-877-289-9200. That's 1-877-289-9200.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yo.
Sarah America Radio's Morning's Edition. We're going to put this thing down here. We're sitting here with Melvin Van Peebles, the director of Sweet Sweetback's Badass Song, and Joe Angio, the director of, what's the full name of that movie? Here we go. How to Eat Your Watermelon and White Company and Enjoy It. It's a documentary. It's premiering tomorrow night at the Tribeca Film Festival. It is at the Michael Schimmel Center for the Arts at Pace University. You can go to the TribecaFilmFestival.org to find out information about that. We're talking to Melvin about his life as in the military, as a bomb navigator with the atomic bomb in the plane, as a cable car driver, as an author, as a member of a comic collective in France that published a anti-government magazine, as a filmmaker. I can't...
Mark, there's one other thing, Mara, and you know, when he was asking me, Riley was asking me a question, he asked me, people come to you all the time. Well, how do you decide? Sometimes also it's no's. For example, take Michael Solomon and Joe Angio. Before I would say yes to these guys, I'm just talking to them one time, and I mentioned the title of the movie, and for them to take it, and you don't have a movie title like How to Eat Your Watermelon and White Company and Enjoy It. I mean, and they have that streak of just not even anti-establishment, of just goofiness that I like.
Hey.
And that's what's in the movie. And so I'm very pleased. For example, you were talking about my son, Badass, Mario, Badass. I never saw it until it was finished.
Uh-huh.
And I never saw this movie until it was finished. But I put my trust in the guys. All I wanted to do is I want to see it through their eyes, and I'm very pleased with the movie. I just see it through their eyes. But they even have a chutzpah to even use this title. Says everything. Marshall McLuhan said that the medium is the message.
Very true. Now, I got to get you to tell one quick story. Because back when you were shooting Sweetback, you gave some play to what was then a very little-known rhythm and blues group who came to you. Talk about that and who they ended up being.
Well, what happened was when I finished the Sweetback, the editing, you had to do the music, and then I'd written the music. I had this weird idea of how I wanted it, so I had to have people who didn't know anything about film and music so they wouldn't give me a hard time. Also, so they wouldn't charge me anything because of the opportunity. But also, they had to be good musicians, etc., to play this weird stuff. And, you know, they say, God may not come when you call him, but he's always right on time. And through Jesus, this is what happened. My secretary was sleeping with the head of this band. And I'm interviewing these
through Jesus.
Yeah, through Jesus. Amen. And she said, would you try my group? And she did this band, and so I tried these guys with some, they had some cocky name. I asked them to change their name, but they wouldn't change their name. Anyway, it was their first album. The band turned out to be Earth, Wind, and Fire.
So they were pretty good.
Yeah, pretty good band.
Yeah, right. And they were as great as the sweetest guys in the world. But they were great. They were great. But that's how.
And that was actually, what, 2-3 years before they actually got signed by a major label, on the soundtrack.
Yeah, this was their first thing. Yeah, and then they... Yep, that's right.
And I have to say, of all the things that that I learned about Melvin in the course of making this film, the thing that probably was most revealing was the music side, the music career. Again, not just like everything else he did, how he taught himself to play music, but just the influence. Any history of hip hop you read, it all kind of travels up to Gil Scott-Heron. Excuse me, and Gil Scott-Heron says, one of my main influences was Melvin. Then you get Melvin saying, the guy who really, kind of influenced me greatly in the start of my music was, this Frenchman from the turn of the last century, Aristide Briand. I always butcher his name. Yeah. But, it's not like we're trying to, engage in any revisionist history, but if you're, doing the flow chart of history of hip-hop, you can trace it back through Melvin up to Aristide Briand or something. But that, to me, was pretty shocking.
The favorite piece that he did musically was a song called The Birth Certificate Ain't Nothing But a Death Warrant.
Yeah.
Now, I forgot which album. Oh, that was the What the Blank.
What the Blank, where you mean I can't sing.
And for whatever reasons, I just kept playing that song over and over and over again. Because at a point, it kind of summed up a lot. A lot of the stuff in Sweetback and during that era kind of connected to, I think, what a lot of young black people were feeling at the time. That's for sure.
Well, the fatality, everybody seems to... To duck, you're going down, you might as well go down swinging. Hello?
Well, yeah, are you pretty proud of your legacy in general in terms of you being, the sort of king of what became, I guess, blaxploitation film, but also hip-hop and everything else? Is there any part of what you're attributed that you have a problem with?
No, none. I mean, I've just have to drop my drawings. I'm a little smarter than that. I made things happen.
Yeah.
I did not have the hubris to assume that what I would make happen would fall in line, et cetera, et cetera. But I knew it had to get started.
Yeah.
I wish blaxploitation had been different. I wish rap would have not gone to the gangsters. But those things will come around, but you got to get it started, y'all.
That's right.
You got to get it started.
Well, thank you for being with us, Melvin Van Peebles. I appreciate it, Joanne.
Thank you.
The film opens tonight.
Always good to see you.
You guys. Thank you for having us.
Adding your watermelon in White Company. Enjoy it tonight at the Tribeca Film Festival, Michael Schimmel Center. Tomorrow night. Sorry. Here's the liberal agenda for today. 1, use the photo of President Bush and the Saudi Prince holding hands in your new flyer promoting gay marriage. 2, tonight stand outside your neighbor's window with a universal remote control, and every time he turns on American Idol, switch it to Tavis Smiley.
There you go.
3, console morbidly obese people by reminding them they're helping to promote safe sex by making sure no one wants to them. 4, conserve energy by turning down the thermostat in the freezer where you store your mother's dead body so you can collect her social security checks. At 5, today's phrase is dropping into conversation. Without the filibuster to keep out extremist judges, this country would have a worse bench than the Seattle Mariners. Wake up, sheeple. They want to keep us in the minors forever.
Yeah.
Thank you, Melvin. Thank you, Joe.
It's been a lot of fun today, Maren. I have no idea who we got tomorrow, but
Phil
Lesh. Phil Lesh from the Grateful Dead. Yeah. Have a great day. This is Air America Radio.